Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
On this week's Big Tech Show, when you travel, how do you avoid getting completely ripped off on roaming charges outside of Europe? And what are some of the travel hacks you should know about that aren't included in the tech you buy? We give you all the tips you need to know.
On top of my list, Adrian, is my noise-cancelling headphones. When I put them on, I love that it just goes boom, and you're in this kind of sonic bubble and you can't hear the baby and you can't hear that weird frequency of the aircon on the airplane.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
It's 30 years of Allianz supporting the leagues, and we're not done yet. Only the leagues, only the Allianz leagues.
Hello and welcome to the Throw-In, independent.ie's GA podcast in association with Allianz. I'm Will Slattery and I'm delighted to be joined for our chat looking back on the football weekend by Dick Clark and Donica Boyle and Sinead Cassan. And although there was plenty of on-field intrigue over the weekend from Dublin's first win of the campaign over Tyrone and Kerry edging Mayo on Saturday night, Donica, we might start off with the kind of ongoing dispute between the GPA and the GAA that's kind of gathered more steam over the last week or so. The negotiations breaking down over expense claims for inter-county players. And I know you were at the Meath Cork game and Andy McEntee referred to it after the game as well. Although most managers and I think all the players didn't speak to the media as part of a kind of a media blackout as this rumbles on. You know, what's your assessment of the situation at the moment and how much further could this go?
It's a very tricky one because, like, it on the face of it, absolutely. You know, now that the crowds are back, returned to the 65 cent a mile, I think there's no doubt about that. The fact that it's been restored, I think, as of Friday night, and that any outstanding money is in the process of being paid, that should have been taken care of a little bit earlier, I think. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The other side of it is, I didn't sense any great outrage over the last couple of weeks about this. I certainly got none of it from either the Meath or the Cork camp. They seemed very happy. Andy McEntee's literally one line to us was saying, listen, there's no problem in Meath, but if there is a problem elsewhere, we have to stand up for him. And that was the only line he gave to the media. So it's a very tricky one, but I'm not sure the level of outrage that exists there. And I'm sure that as this negotiation goes on this week and positions harden, I'm sure that the GAA will be very conscious of that. You know, relations between the two of them are strained at the best of times, I think, and maybe that's the way it should be to some degree. But I'm not sure that that there is the widespread anger among players that might be the impression, because I've certainly over the last couple of weeks got none of it, and there was definitely nothing in Navan yesterday after the Meath and Cork game on the pitch. I know a couple of players did stuff with local media, and as far as I could make out, they were largely unaware of the issue, or certainly weren't motivated by it. So that was my sense of it over the last couple of weeks and on the pitch in Navan after the game yesterday.
Yeah, Dick, as a former player yourself, like, where do your sympathies lie, or what's your view on it? It was an interesting discussion last night in League Sunday. Tom Parsons of the GPA was giving his view. Colm O'Rourke was giving an alternative view, saying maybe the players were asking for too much, or that they should be, you know, content with what they were being given from the GA. What's your take on it?
Yeah, well, I suppose sort of blindsided a lot of people when it came up last week, because like we're in the middle of March now, and if there had been a real chronic problem with players in counties not getting paid expenses and there was something unhappy, as Zonica said, you'd have heard about it, you know, irrespective of anything coming from the GPA. So it's like all of these things, well, the devil's in the detail. I think there's a lot more going on here that we haven't been told, as you said, and you're going to hear more of what the Meath management and the Cork management give, that this isn't across the board. So again, if you go back to the GPA's initial statement, you could read it that no players have been given any expenses at all this year, and that just does not seem to be the case. So you know, I think the questions have to be asked, well, what exactly are they looking for? And again, what counties are not being paid, and you know, is this just a few localized issues that everybody en masse have been asked to go in behind? If that's the case, that's fine, but be open about that. Don't be claiming that everybody is suffering. So again, it's very difficult when we're only been told sort of half stories and we didn't have the information to make an assessment either way. I think there's an element too that I think Colin O'Rourke tried to articulate last night. I'm not sure if he came across a wee bit too anti-GPA, is that what are the GPA looking for in terms of a sustainable model for the intercounty game? Because I don't think anybody could agree that it should be okay that a county team should be asked to train 7 days a week, you know, run the championship season, and that can be funded carte blanche, because that's effectively what Tom Parsons was saying last night, that if that's the case, well, so be it, the players have to be covered for it. But the question is, in terms of player welfare, sustainable amateur model, where's that conversation in line with expenses? Because the two of them have to be had at the same time. Like, you know, if it is the case the county teams now is the norm, been asked to train 5-6 times a week, that's not sustainable. Like, that's not fair, and it's not sustainable. So that conversation has to be had in parallel, almost first, before any talk about expenses are, because, you know, you're going down a very unsustainable route from a semi-professional road. Like, I certainly could never have played for as long as I did if that's the way the game had become. And if that's the way it is becoming, someone needs to put the brakes on some way or another. Maybe expenses is not the way to do that, but it has to be reined in a wee bit. So again, there's a lot more to this that we just don't know, so it's hard to make a call either way on it.
Donegal, it does kind of feel it did kind of come out of nowhere last week. I know Joanne Cantwell was trying to push Tom Parsons on this last night, but how far do you believe this could escalate?
The GPA in a very tricky position here, because in some ways they're biting the hand that feeds them. You know, they're primarily funded by GAA funds. And Tom Parsons' argument last night, they have to be very careful, because I've written this piece a few times, but I think people love their players. They love their county players. They want to see them get along. They never want to see them be out of pocket in any way, shape or form. And I don't think anyone's in any doubt, now that crowds are back, the 65 cent a mile thing should come back and that should be paid up and everyone's getting on with it. At the same time, I don't think the GPA as an organisation enjoy the level of support among just the general GAA membership as their local players do, as Dick did, say, in Curran when he was playing with Monaghan. I'm not sure they would look as favourably on the GPA as an organisation as people do at their local county Stars. So the GPA, they have a tricky little line to walk here in terms of escalating it, because, you know, they're within their rights to do something. But as I say, I sense nothing from their membership yesterday or in the last couple of weeks that would suggest that they can push this on much further and no one will ask any questions. Look, the GAA and the GPA, there's a lot of brinkmanship down through the years through different things. Like, they generally go to the wire and they generally find a way. And I think that's the way it's going to be again this time around. And it's definitely the way it should be. Like, I would have a little wry smile at the managers wading in behind the players. Like, I would say
some of them didn't,
but I would say for some managers the worst 5 or 6 minutes of their week managing their county team is when 5 or 6 dictaphones are stuck in front of them after a match on a Saturday evening or a Sunday afternoon. So
convenient for them. Yeah,
when they got the chance to dodge it, I'd say they took it with both hands and went, and which is fine. Like, you know, it's just part of the thing. But yeah, it's a tricky thing, but I think, look, this will be sorted. I think they need to just get around and figure this thing out. I know the GAA made moves on Friday night. Just one other point that I meant to touch on earlier. That Tom Parsons was saying, like, you know, the GAA make huge money and, you know, therefore, you know, the players are entitled to a slice of pie is fine. But it sort of glosses over the fact, and the GAA always make this point, and it's probably the one area they're pretty much close to untouchable on, is around 85 cent of every euro, 80 plus cent of every euro goes straight back into the games in some way, shape or form, be it capital projects, infrastructure, coaches, development, you know. And that's, so it's not as if anyone's hoarding the money here and are you know, someone that there's unfair, like, the money goes back into the games as they are. And you know, if you look around, and if your club is an all-weather pitch, or it has floodlights, or it has a ball wall, or whatever it is, you know, there's a good chance that the same pot of money that the GPA are talking about contributes to that.
Yeah, and it'll be certainly interesting to see over the next week even, let alone the rest of the Alliance League campaign, to see how these things develop and whether or not an agreement is reached. Dick, were you going to come in there?
No, watch this space. Like, I always say, players should play. Players shouldn't get pulled into stuff like that. I never liked it when I was a player. I think you have a small window there. You have enough energy and time to worry about just training and playing and delivering. It's for people who are, let's be honest, the GPA are getting paid to sort these things out, and it's their job to sort it out. If it's got to this stage and players have been asked to whatever, but interviews, let's be honest, the way things have been there over the last few years, we're not losing a whole pile. And probably the GPA might reflect on how people might sort of say, well, with all due respect, the lack of media engagement there has been of the player group over the last number of years, you know, it's not much of a leveraging tool at the minute. But I think players should be focused on playing, and any notion of strike, I think that was the word that maybe Joanne was trying to tease out of Tom last night, and he wasn't going to say it. If there's any notions of asking players to strike, you'll find that there won't be much support for that. That would be my opinion, because most counties are very well looked after. And there's a lot of counties, let's be honest, don't even really engage with or recognise the GPA. And that's a lot of people don't realise. Just get on with their business. They pay what they have to be paid. They look after the players. And that's it. And that will be the case. So just GPA have to be tread carefully on this one.
Yeah, that's. I actually just want to ask you one about that, Dick. Like, as a player, when you were there, like, did you sense that most people were like just passive members of the GPA and just kind of, you know, look, if we get grants or whatever it is, we get it, it's great and all that. But I don't really sense a militancy among the general body of players. As you said, just want to get on with playing.
That would be the case. A passive membership would be, at different times there might be a need or a want, and it would do certain things, but a lot of the stuff that they had been involved in there for a few years hadn't really an awful lot to do with the actual players themselves. They were getting involved in other things that mightn't have necessarily had a direct connection with the players. So I think you have to be very careful on this one, because if what was, you know, and I haven't been speaking to anyone in Croke Park, I'm not involved in anything there, I'm not speaking on anyone's behalf here, but looking at what was put up on the screen last night in terms of the GAA are happy to fund 4 collective sessions a night at 65 cents a night, that's more than I ever got when I played. You know, that's a good deal, and that's sustainable. But there's another caveat to this, and this was the detail, and sorry, this, I know it's taken over the meeting, there's the whole move to amalgamating the ladies, the Camogies, the GAA at large. So all of this has to come on the table. How can we fund all of this sustainably? Because absolutely, the ladies and the Camogues should be getting whatever the senior men's players are. So that has to be brought into a sustainable expenses model as well, because I don't think people realise how much money it takes to fund county teams, especially expenses. It's colossal. And it's a check that you have to be sure that you can write before you're making these big demands. I think that's probably a big element of where, not just what's here and now, but where we're moving to long term. We'll go back to that earlier point. What's a sustainable long term model we need to be looking into here, not just the here and now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an interesting couple of weeks for sure on that front, to see how it all develops and if an agreement is ultimately reached. Maybe to move on to on field action then, Dunica, we might start with Dublin's win over the All Ireland champions Tyrone, their first victory of the campaign. Maybe kind of gives them a boost in terms of staying in Division One. What did you make of their performance? You know, obviously a very strong first half. They look to be clicking maybe in ways we haven't seen in quite a while. Not a great second half, but ultimately got the job done.
Yeah, I think we were here a few weeks ago, and I think both myself and Dick made the point that, you know, Dublin will be fine down the line, and I think we're just starting to see the start of that. There was little hints of it in the Kildare game. You know, another viewing of that game saying Dublin could have won that, a couple of goal chances, important times, they didn't do it. They were a lot better yesterday. They got James McCarthy back in the pitch. They have like Owen Merchant, they got Conor Costello fit again, you know, a few little bits fell their way, and they're definitely played in a sort of an urgency that we hadn't seen before. They still have Paddy Small to come back in and Conor Callaghan, and I think McCarthy and O'Callaghan in particular were the two boys that are going to transform Dublin. And if you look at the team they put out yesterday and you throw Conor into the starting team and Paddy Small wherever you're going to have him, be the starter or coming in, I think they're, you know, they look like a very formidable unit all of a sudden. That's not to say there wasn't issues in the first few games, but yesterday was probably the start of their season, I would say. I wouldn't be surprised if they win their next two games and finish on 6 points. And in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be going, what was all the fuss about? And they are nailed on red hot favourites for Leinster again, I would say. And then all of a sudden, then they're into knockout football. And who would fancy them at that stage? So, you know, who would fancy taking them on? I mean, like, so... Now, Dublin are fine. I think their season has started. They're up and running now. And I think that in the next few weeks, we'll see them open, stretch their legs a little bit. And they'll be, no one's going to fancy them. No one from any of the top teams.
Dick, there's been a lot of talk about the lack of invention in the forward play in previous games by the Dubs. Was the movement of the forwards much better in this game? Was that one of the big improvements?
Well, league games are always very interesting. And yesterday, because things can just sort of take on a bit of a shape of their own. And a couple of things. They're playing with a strong breeze at their back in the first half. And it was perfect. If you're coming up with a cause and you're trying to set out your stall early, there's nothing you want that you can hit the ground running. So you could see they put a full press right up on, and Tyrone literally just couldn't get out of their own half. You know, they're playing against the breeze, and Dublin were bringing that energy and intensity. So with that, it was always going to be a great first half for them to try and make a bit of a statement. Now, Tyrone were very poor yesterday, and that has to be. Tyrone, you'd be very worried, you're looking ahead, and Tyrone would probably say, oh, well, what about last year? It was fine. Yeah, last year was last year. You don't have the unknown quantity and all the rest that you had last year. So Tyrone were very, very, very average and very ill-disciplined, and that's been a sort of a running trend through their league games in terms of losing men, and they just want to be careful around that. That being said, Dublin done what they had to do. They came up and had brought a level of energy, and the scores then came. I suppose that's what they hadn't brought. They hadn't brought that level of intensity and had the ball in the right areas of the pitch often enough for the scorers to do what we know that they can do in good scoring positions. You know, we've seen against Armagh and Kerry and other teams, they were laboured, they were slow ball into the forwards, they were kicking under pressure, they were kicking against flank defence. They were playing from behind, whereas yesterday they were playing from the front. So it forced Tyrone, with a man down for most of the game between the black card in the first half and Hamsey going off early in the second half. So the cards just fell very nicely for Dublin to do what they had to do. So I just caveat it a wee bit because, as I say, Tyrone were very poor, very ill-disciplined. Dublin scored 2 points in the second half with a man extra, and there were two fisted points. You know, there's still a bit to go. That's not the Dublin of old. Dublin of old would have buried that Tyrone team by 15 plus points yesterday. All right. Tyrone could have got a goal in the second half, and I could have gone down to the last 10 minutes. It didn't. They seen it off. But listen, they'll be happy. They've got a win. Pressure's off a wee bit, and they'll be looking forward to Donegal as a definite 2 points the way they're at the minute. Yes,
we're always drawn to Dublin and the story because of how good they've been for the while. But in some ways, the story is Tyrone yesterday. Yeah. You know, late round one and two, you would have said, right, they're only back from the holiday, getting fellas back. And now we're in round five, and you know, it was very underwhelming. They have sort of leaked, they've lost a couple of players just like dripped out of the panel. And you know, I think maybe we haven't seen it yet, but that's going to bite at some stage, just really going to bite at some stage, because they've lost fellas who were either coming on. Like, I think Tyrone McCann maybe won the Donegal game from last year. I think he got 2 or 3 points off the bench room, he's gone. Lost another handful of fellas, good experience lads.
Mark Bradley, boys like that. I would agree with you.
And the Paddy Hansey thing yesterday, I thought was just, you're on a black, you're experienced, you've been around the block, you know, you're chasing the game a little bit, you know, you're just get on with the game. It's just, we don't know what's going on, but like that little moment from a fella who is, you know, experienced, very accomplished inter-county footballer, and it's just needless, completely needless, and basically took the life out of their own challenge, really.
Yeah, I think it's been poor stuff, let's be honest, in terms of the Armagh game yesterday. Mick McCarron should have got a red card. Like, it was a clean strike on Brian Fenton as well, and that's just petulance. That's all that was, frustration. Like, they're not carrying the mantle of All-Ireland champions very well, let's be honest. And listen, some boys love nothing more than hear us talking about that, no more so than me from Monaghan, but that's the reality, and they've been I tell you what, they'd be sort of a bookie's favourite, I'd say, to relegate, because they have to get, you know, points out of Mayo and Kerry, and the form that they're in, there's a big gap there, just as we, you know, there's no 2 week break now for them to regroup. They have to get the performance levels up. They're playing like boys that just think they're a bit better than maybe they are, and they need to really just, you know, because whatever with retaining their All Ireland, which looks a long way away, they'll struggle to get out of Ulster. They're struggling to beat Derry, so they really need to. And you could see the frustration in Logan and Duhar, like when they're, you know, surrounding referees at the end of the game, and there's nothing to be, you know, at the referee about yesterday. It wasn't the referee done them any disfavors. They need to sort
just
of...
to come in on one thing about Tyrone. You know, you mentioned the lads both mentioned there, but the kind of players departing the panel. Like, what is the mood up around Tyrone? Are supporters questioning why guys are leaving an All Ireland winning team like that? Like, it's,
no,
it's just,
you
know, like
never
a
get a straight. For the last 20 years, you'd hear all sorts of stuff coming across the border, and they could be eating each other inside. And next thing, they'd still turn up and win an All Ireland, get to an All Ireland final. So even where they're at, you wouldn't write them off, because there is almost, in spite of themselves, they'll still come out. But it just in terms of the here and now, they're, you know, the performances just aren't at the level. You can't be using the excuse either. I think Donegal, that was trotted out, you know, coming back from holidays. Like, I seen them up in Omagh against Monaghan. Like, these boys don't carry weight. Like, they trained and played longer than any county in the country last year in terms of an All Ireland final and then club. So they, you know, fitness isn't really an issue for boys at this level anymore. It's not like it used to be when I was playing. You'd come out of January with a big arse on you and you'd take you till Easter and go, these boys are, you know, they're fit. You know, fitness is not an issue. It's attitude. It's discipline is the problem. And,
well, can they turn that around, Dick, do you reckon?
Yes, the same way as Dublin have. Yeah. Absolutely. So they need to get back. There was no intensity. There was no aggression. Sure. There was no, bar the petulance in the second half that you've seen, there was no proper aggression and intensity. You go back to where they won the All-Ireland last year. It wasn't against Mayo. It was against Kerry. That just a playing above themselves for 70 minutes. We haven't seen that from them there this year. And they need to find that back, or they'll find themselves just slipping into the pack very quickly.
Well, it just, the other Kerry game, that like, can the Sinead Askin kind of turn it around? Like, the other Kerry game last year, what was it, 6 goals? They looked, they were shipping water, you know, whatever it was, 4, 8, 7, 8 weeks, whatever it was later, you know, they turned it around and they beat Kerry themselves. So, you know, they can absolutely turn it around, and, you know, there's plenty to be done, but
time short. Like, that doesn't say the tight season now. Like, you have weeks. You
well, that's it. That's
really
the difference. Is because the championship starts so soon. Absolutely. This year. There is no breathing space after.
They have Derry chomping at the bit, and they will be really relishing getting the cut at them. Like, it'll be the first time in God how many years that a Derry team would fancy taking on Tyrone, and, you know, as quick as the league is over. That'll be that. Like, now you talk about septic rivalries, there's nothing like Derry and Tyrone up in Northern Ireland. So, you know, that they, you know, Donegal will already have Tyrone on their sights for that, and Tyrone will be looking over their shoulder as well very quickly.
The other big game of the weekend, Donegal probably Kerry Mayo on Saturday night. Kerry coming out narrow 1 point victors. Jack O'Connor, you know, speaking afterwards, was very kind of pleased with, you know, a backs against the wall win. I think he said there's been a couple of games over the last couple of years where Kerry maybe haven't come out on the right side of a battle like that. But it's interesting to read Joe Brolly's kind of assessment of the game on the Sunday Independent. He said it was dross, a woeful game. Seemed to be drawing conclusions on the health of the sport generally, just based on Saturday night. Like, what did you make of it? Was he being overly harsh in his summation?
Well, to be honest, it was a very typical modern high-class game of football, I think. You know, the particularly on a night like that, there's a lot of bodies behind the ball, a lot of patience, you know, people pick and choose their moments. You know, and it gets better in the second half as legs tire a little bit and gaps open up. I think that's, if you go to any Division 1, and certainly Division 1, maybe a little to certain teams in Division 2, that is the nature of the game now. It doesn't be great. My own theory is that players should be sent on either a brisk 5K or 10K run before the ball is thrown in. And then the gaps are open and the game is a little bit, because the amount of times the second half is a better game than the first half. And it's because there's little gaps open up and stuff like that. So, but as far as Kerry Mayo, like, I think Jack's right. I think you dig one of them out against a team like Mayo, who are streetwise and going as well as they are. Like, you can take a lot for them. It's my own suspicion too that is a dress rehearsal for a very big game later this year. I think we'll see them in Croke Park. I'm not sure exactly what stage, but I do think we'll see them again. And I'd say it'll be a semi final or maybe a final, depending on, you know, if both teams come out of provinces and that sort of stuff, or where they come in when they join the All Ireland series. But I think Mayo can take a lot from it too. Like, very few teams go to Kerry and win. I think even Dublin and Pomp, you know, I remember a couple of nights there were some big draws down in Tralee and stuff like that. So it's a very difficult place to go and win. They had the run on them in the last 10 minutes and they could have drawn, but for a Lee Keegan point, they just fell just the wrong side of the post. The point attempt fell the wrong side of the post. So look, it's by no means a disaster for Mayo. And they're still looking around to see what they have and all that. Mayo were very good against Armagh. I covered that game the week before. They could be in for a big year as well. So, look, I think that was a dress rehearsal for something bigger down the line.
Yeah, I definitely think it was Dunica. I mean, it just didn't take off the game like we expected that it would. And there was a lot of anticipation down in Tralee. My parents left for the game 2 hours before throw-in because they wanted to make sure they get into the stand well in time because, of course, it was such a miserable night down in Tralee. But it just never took off. Dick, are we seeing with Kerry and their kickouts that this could become a concern for them in the championship later?
No, I was very impressed with them in Monaghan, the way that they beat Monaghan a couple of weeks ago. We'll talk about Monaghan in a wee minute and how they bounced back. But they like were very, very solid in the back. Like Dermot O'Connor was good in the middle. Jack Barry. Yeah, the only thing is, the game, you can get away with now not having natural big midfielders. You know, it used to be the case. You used to have the far larger. It's not going to cost you. Because you'll still always get, even on a bad day, you'll get 70-80% of your own kickouts if things aren't working. Like, so if that's where their only Achilles heel is, I think they'll still opt for mobility around the likes of a Jim O'Connor than maybe dropping in a David Moore. You know, they're sort of looking, they need to sort of have a Croke Park All-Ireland final pace team, and they have that. And they've all, you know, based on what we've seen so far, they've a lot of pace, they've a lot of mobility, they've still the likes of Gavin White, Paul Murphy to come in to add that as well. So, listen, Kerry are the form team, there's no doubt about it. In terms of the Saturday night game, I sort of called it last week. I said this is just going to be a bit of a, you know, challenge match almost. Mm-hmm. Both teams are, for all intents and purposes, done with the league. It's about getting players fit, not getting anybody injured, and getting ready for the championship, in which is literally a couple of weeks around now. And Mayo, I'd say, are already sort of focusing their attention now on Galway in the championship. And so I think Mayo will be happy enough to get out of there. Good competitive game. Could have got a draw, could have won it. Lost by a last-minute point. Nothing lost, really.
And as Dunica said, like whatever about later on in the year, they could even be playing in a league final potentially in a couple of weeks. They're probably still the two favourites.
They could,
to maybe,
they could.
Just the Kerry defence, Dunica, obviously when Paddy Talley came in, you know, there was a lot of focus on that, you know, a Tyrone man coming down and being part of a Kerry setup. They've only conceded one goal across the league. Like, have you been impressed with how they defended, you know, to only concede one goal in five games is pretty good going.
Yeah, and that's the obvious thing. To look at Paddy Talley and draw the conclusion between him, and I'm sure he's brought loads. But I suppose there's natural improvement there as well, because those lads are still relatively young. Like, you know, they've only a few seasons. For every season they get under a belt at this stage of their career, I think they're going to improve naturally. I think they have some options now as well. It seems like, you know, they had the cornerback. I can't remember his name. But they do seem to have some depth there now in the defensive options that maybe they didn't seem to have. And Tadhg Morley's playing very well, as Dick mentioned. Paul Murphy wasn't there, and they found a way to get by without him and win without him. So, yeah, it was the thing we talked about all the time was did they have the back six, or did they have the defensive system? I suppose more accurate way of putting it, to cope with the best teams. And you know, all the signs are so far that they're moving the right direction in that regard. Mm-hmm.
And Dick, one of the wins of the weekend was your own county as well, in Ballybuffet, where Donegal have such a strong home record over the last number of years. I think it's their first league defeat there for 12 years. You know, Banty pulling out another very big result. Monaghan, very good chance of maybe staying in Division 1 now. What did you make of their performance?
Yeah, it really was. Credit where credit was due. I didn't get up for it yesterday, just couldn't travel. My dad was at it and was chatting to me. He says, listen, it was just a really, really good performance. Probably one of Monaghan's best performances now. For quite a while, start to finish, like real. I was worried from after what I'd seen in this game against Kerry, because they were way off the pace. They looked like, oh, there's a bit of a gulf here in class. And I says, right, I'm on and not where I maybe thought that they were. But listen, they've turned it around. Like, they were really, really good defensively. You'll always get that honesty and hard work. But, you know, we've got a good turn up front as well. You know, Andrew Woods continues to impress. Bit of physicality. Something, you know, Gary Mogan, something different. Again, Monaghan had loads of guys over the last 10 years who are hard working and, you know, making create an awful lot in terms of, you know, they do a lot of passing and lateral stuff around the middle. A few guys now that you can drop a ball in and what might create something out of nothing. And that's really where the goal came out of. You know, just somebody good, natural, big, full forward, able to win his old ball and stick it in the net. Conor McManus put in a good shift. Again, he gets it hard to win frees. He gets a lot of close attention, but he worked really hard and was a good outlet. Two Hugheses put in a good shift. So really, really good, solid performance from Monaghan. Like, and they were comfortable winners up there. against Donegal, who were poor but weren't allowed to play. Like, you know, they kick a lot of poor wides, but that's because of the pressure Monaghan put well. So I think all credit has to go to Bandy and the boys for turning around after what was a very probably a tough day in a scheme, you know, against Kerry a few weeks ago, to put them in a really good position to stay up, which I think they will. I think they'll be by now and go down to Newbridge and you know, should get a result there, which should hopefully be enough, and won't have to worry about taking something off the Dubs in the last day.
Where's Donegal at though, Dick, at the moment? I mean, they had that performance against Kerry down in Kerry, and then, you know, the win over Tyrone, and then this yesterday they had Michael Murphy back. They seem a bit stuck at the moment.
Yeah, they were put, like, I suppose the second half against Tyrone 2 weeks ago almost seems to be against the head in terms of when you look at the rest of the performances. Like, I'd say Tyrone probably just took their foot off the pedal thinking that game was done and dusted, and it just got away from them, and we probably thought Donegal were in a better place than they were. But if you look at their performances as a whole, you know, they haven't been great. But again, Donegal are one of those strange counties. Like, you know, even look at that, like, they had a good performance against Mayo when they opened the day. They were fairly comprehensive against Kildare, that, so they could easily turn around and put in a good shift against Dublin next week. You know, they're personnel wise, there's a few guys still to come in, and you know, Michael Murphy seems to, the fact that he came on early last week, now he was well marshalled, didn't have a huge influence on the game, which would have been a concern for them. You'll probably see him starting against Dublin because they're in a bit of a relegation. Like, they're on 5 points. They're not safe. 5 points won't keep you safe now. So they need to be looking to try and pick up points, and they're not want to take it to the last day. But there'll be a bit of a concern there. You know, Paddy McBrearty just still struggles to be that leader up front when Murphy's not there. And, you know, on a day that there isn't anybody else to pick up the scores, you get what you had yesterday, that they were just quite poor in front of goal. So, yeah, there'll be question marks. But again, Donegal are that sort of county that they can, you know, turn a performance out of nothing, because they have physicality, they have talent there. It's just sometimes you just don't get it out on the day.
Yeah, Donegal, like, that result kind of, again, puts the focus on an Ulster. It really is wide open. And as was mentioned earlier in the show, like, with the championship so near, you know, you have, like, Armagh, Tyrone, Donegal, Monaghan all in Division 1, Derry, who look, you know, good bet to be promoted to Division 1 as well. Like, there's a lot of competitive counties, and no one seems to be, you know,
Antrim.
Pulling away.
Antrim.
Yeah,
I just want to say, like, I covered, like, obviously they're outsiders in the sense of the company they're in, but Antrim, I saw Antrim against Armagh last year. They lost the game by 13 points, but it was no more a 13-point game. No. It was about 55 minutes, I think, there was 3 points in it, and a short kick out went wrong, and a goal went in, and that was it. But they were really well organised, really well conditioned, and every game they get exposed to at a higher level, they're going to get better and better. But yeah, no, it's always been difficult, but this year it does seem particularly resurgent, the Ulster Championship. Like, any one of those teams, you could make a case for... I think you make a case for probably 7 of the 9, could you, Dick? Maybe, or maybe certainly 5 or 6.
Oh, right. 5 or 6. Down, Cavan. No, they're not too.
Well, sorry,
Fermanagh, five of the... No, yeah, you have 6 counties there. You probably, yeah, you've got the top 4 Division 1, Derry, and Antrim as an outside bet.
You mightn't say Antrim would win it, but I would say Antrim would have the capacity to make it difficult for somebody on a given day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, look, it seems to be more competitive even by its own than by its own usual standards. So
shows, Donegal, like, and people always ask me about Monaghan this and how did Monaghan do that. But there's Antrim coming again. Right? Antrim are doing well because the best players in the county playing. The two McCanns back, who are, you know, would get on most county teams, but for an awful lot of the last sort of even 10 years at different times, boys like them, things weren't right in the county and they weren't put. So every county has the out there, I genuinely believe, has the potential to do what Antrim's doing now. And there was somebody else before it was Antrim, you know, just getting their act together, getting the best players there, good structures together, and getting a bit of momentum and improvement, you know, and that's what Antrim have done. They've just got a bit of a feel-good factor going at the minute. And McGinley's coming in, obviously bringing his experience. He's got them bought into something, which, and I know from Antrim football and playing against them, there's plenty of years that's just not there. And there's a team thrown together, and that's not what they have at the minute. And you know, it's really good to see, because you'd love to see a strong Antrim Belfast team. Do you know what I mean? It really would really be good for the GA.
Yeah, and they have a huge game against Louth in their next one. I think whoever wins that probably is a very strong bet to be promoted. I think that's in Louth next weekend, so that'll be a very big game.
And McGinley, interesting side plot.
Yeah. Two men who know each other very well. Duncan, could just have a quick look at Division 2. I know you were at the Meath Cork game, you know, two counties who have been struggling for form. Meath obviously got a pretty comprehensive win in the end as well. Cork now staring down the barrel of potentially being relegated to Division 3, with given they have to play Kerry in the Munster semi-final. They could be looking at a Tailteann Cup run rather than an All-Ireland Championship. Run. You know, what did you make of what you saw yesterday?
Well, I covered Meath and Roscommon a few weeks ago, and I left that thinking Meath were in real trouble. Roscommon were missing, I think, maybe four or five starters between the Follies and the Pierce lads. And I thought Meath were in real bother. Meath were an awful lot better yesterday. Andy McIntyre has used 11 goalkeepers in his, I think it's six seasons now, in competitive matches. And that includes outfielders like Joe Sheridan and a couple of other fellas. A man from my own club got a run for a while, who's a good goalkeeper. But the county never actually settled on somebody. And Harry Hogan has come along and seems to be a very, very calm, level-headed fella. But he kicked five frees into the wind yesterday in the first half, which was critical to helping them establish a sort of a foothold, and they went in, I think, 5 points up at half time, and then after that they never really looked back. Cork got the first 2 points of the half, and Meath had sort of started slowly, and there was a small sense of anxiety building here. Are they going to let them back in? Because Meath have been so Jekyll and Hyde in their game so far. Well, actually not particularly good at any stage, I think it's fair to say, but when they've been bad, they've been really bad, and there's a little bit of restlessness. And then Jason Scully steered over a lovely point, and you could just feel the pressure lifting, and I think Meath hit 1-4 on the spin, which helped them effectively win the game. After that run, actually, they were 10 points clear at one stage, and I think that's, like, it sets alarm bells ringing for Cork, because, as I say, Meath have been quite poor to this point, probably lucky to get a draw on Offaly with the last minute goal, and then come and win by 8 points, and they were fully deserving of an 8-point win. If it went to double figures, I don't think Cork could have had major complaints. Now, they have injuries. They actually made 9 substitutions yesterday, between blood subs and head injuries and different things like that. John O'Rourke came onto the pitch on 3 separate occasions. So, like, they've had a terrible run with injuries. They have a couple of others, like Sean Powder is out at the minute. So they are missing a lot, but they are in a bit of bother now. There's no doubt about it on the evidence of yesterday. I think the best thing about Cork is that the last two games are against Offaly and Down, who, along with Meath, are in that little mini division within the division, in Division 2, of the 4 teams who are kind of fighting it out to avoid the relegation spot. So, still in Cork's hands, but, like, by no means are they certain of coming out of both those games with enough points to stay up. And as you point out, this is really, you would reckon, their only way to avoid Tailteann Cup football, because the chance of them turning over Kerry in a Munster semi-final at the minute would be remote, you'd have to say.
Yeah, Dick, what is the state of Cork football at the moment? It seems to be a conversation that's been on loop now for the last number of years. They had that knockout win over Kerry in the Munster Championship a few years ago before losing to Tipperary in the Munster final. As Dunica said, you know, they're playing Kerry now in the Munster semi-final, so, you know, maybe looking likely for the Cheltenham Cup. How serious is the situation that they find themselves in again, Cork football?
Sure, listen, they've been there for the best part of 10 years, let's be honest. Is that All-Ireland winning team gradually started to break up? You know, there's been a lot of years that they've been just so unpredictable, and the performances. I remember some certain games, you know, there's a Tyrone played them about 5 years ago, if you remember, in a qualifier game. They got beaten out the gate by something like 20 points, as if they didn't even want to be there. There's, you know, you go back to what I was saying about Antrim, about a county with maybe limited resources trying to pull together and getting the best out of what they say of the Monaghans of this world. And then you have Cork, this with more resources and players and access to whatever they want. And that's where they're at. You know, there's so, I don't know enough about Cork football, but I know there's obviously things that aren't done well in terms of trying to get the best players in terms of the style of football they want to play. Like, what is Cork football now? What is it about?
What is their identity?
What is it? What,
there was thing a few years ago about Corkness and all the rest, and I, you know, we're none the wiser still.
No,
they just seem a bit lost.
Yes, exactly. There's no, you know, players come and go. There's no consistency in personnel, and every so often they might throw up a big sort of performance against the head, like they did against Kerry a few years ago, and that might sort of quell things in terms of, oh, we're a better place, and then lo and behold, here we are today. And even if they do manage to sort of stay out of relegation, like they're a million miles away from Kerry, like that's it. You know, there'll be a qualifier run is the best that they can get, unless, you know, it's hard to see anything coming out of that. So I don't know is the question. Only the people in Cork and involved down there, they've talked enough about what they're trying to do in terms of systems and structures, but it's hard to see it. It's hard to see it on the pitch. Like, those players would want for nothing, you know, in terms of, you know, supports and facilities and all the rest. So it's hard to say. They can only ask themselves, because it's a very, very poor reflection. Now, the football is the sort of the poor relation by a stretch to hurling, but that's still no excuse. They've still got far more resources, footballing-wise, than the majority of counties in the country. So they should be doing better. It's just not really good enough.
I think it's worth pointing out that, like, you know, Mark Keane, you kind of touched on it there, Dick, that they are the poor relation. But Mark Keane, who like wrote his name into the annals of Cork football history with that goal a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And then as soon as he said, I'm done with the AFL, like, we did a piece with him before he was in the club All-Ireland final. And he was sort of very matter of fact. There was no doubt about whether he was going to play in hurling or football. He was going in with the hurlers. So, you know, it's a little bit like the Dublin hurling team. Like, you know, yeah, there's loads of resources and all that, but like some of the best hurlers in Dublin are also some of the best footballers in Dublin, and similar to Cork, you know, some of the best footballers are in with the hurling panel. So, yeah, you know, they do lose out in that sense. But on yesterday's evidence, I agree with Dick so far as, like, on yesterday's evidence against the Mead team, who had been pretty ordinary to that point. I think that's the nicest way you could describe how Mead had been so far. And they were by a million miles second best. So yeah, they're in. I like Offaly and Down. I think if you went to Offaly now and you give up Offaly a scenario where they beat that Cork team on the evidence of yesterday, they stay up in Division 2, I think they'd have bit your hand off at the start of the year. Yeah. So
who's going down, Donegal?
I think Down are done. I just don't think they've got enough out of the. I think that defeat that Offaly is going to cost them. Mm-hmm. And then Mead are not out of woods, but I'd be surprised. I would say. Oh God! It's very difficult, but maybe it's hard to. It's like on the evidence yesterday, Cork are in real bother. Cork are in real bother.
And they played Down next, of course, Offaly against Roscommon, Clare and Mead. That's next weekend.
All right. Okay.
Clare and Mead, and Mead of Derry in the last game, and of Clare and Ennis. So I still think Mead need at least a point from that game, to be safe, you know.
Yeah. Just on this Division 2, I know you're probably running out of time. Derry, we're all talking about Derry and prepared juice. Jim Wing was sent off in the 78th minute yesterday with a straight red, and they're probably going to need another win. He is their marquee forward. So let's see, do they regret that? Like, that could be a massive thing for Derry. Like, it's very close at the top. Not sure who Derry have left to play, but if he's going to miss a game and the scoring that he has, they could end up tripping up just at the line with the likes of that. So that'll be a very... Now, again, I'm sure these things will be appealed and all the rest, but I just noticed that at the end of yesterday's game, it seemed to be a wee bit fractious. And but for him to... That was a silly one to take now if it costs him a game or two towards the end.
Yeah, well, it's set up to be a very exciting couple of weeks. I think nothing sums that up by looking at the Division 3 table. 2 points separates first from six. And as we mentioned earlier, with Tailteann Cup implications for later in the year, it's going to be a cracking last couple of weekends for the Allianz Football League. But for the moment, Dick, Dunnigan, and Sinead, thanks so much for joining me. That's all we have time for on the Throw-In Podcast in association with Allianz. We'll be back next Monday with a show looking back on all the Allianz League action. In the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.
It's 30 years of Allianz supporting the leagues, and we're not done yet. Only the leagues, only the Allianz leagues.